Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak up. Kōrerotia. Tune in as our guests speak up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right.
Ko Speak Up kōrerotia tēnei kusale kalta nō hō. We're going to be thinking about end of year fatigue, end of year mental health burnout, whatever you might like to call it, which is a real phenomenon, something that I believe has been scientifically, biologically proven, but also something that I'm sure we all are aware of just from our own lived experience, our own lives when we come to this time of year. We've got two guests who are going to be explaining about fatigue, mental health, burnout, and they both come from the addiction sector. So I think we'll probably hear somewhere along the way about how addiction may play into some of these as well. Tiffany Pickett and Lotta Dan. I'm really thrilled you guys took the time at this very, very busy time of year. We've just been talking about everyone's quite stressed and got a lot on their plate at this time. But thank you for taking the time to have this kōrero. I would really love to hear from both of you about yourselves. He aha tō mahi. What do you do? What brought you to where you are today? How are you taking part in today's conversation? Lotta, how about we kick off with you?
Small questions.
Yeah, small questions. Yeah.
Kia ora koutou. It's great to be here. Ko Lotta Dan, toku ingoa. I wear a few different hats. So I'm from Otatahi Christchurch. I live now in Te Whanganui Atara, where I am project lead at Blueprint for Learning, which is an incredible mental health, addiction and disability training organisation. And I run the Addiction 101 workshop. And I used to facilitate the workshop as a lived experience facilitator. I'm in recovery from addiction myself. I started my career as a journalist and TV producer, but I got sober just shy of my 40th birthday and my life took a radically different direction. And my personal life and my brain, and I became someone who was no longer afraid of emotion and was no longer sort of blindly stumbling through life, but someone who has actively worked very hard now to manage myself well, and then in my mahi to help other people, you know, who are interested in living their best lives. So, yeah, I'm delighted to be here. This is my favourite topic. I love talking about well-being and the truth of what's going on for a lot of us. And, yeah, that's me. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you for that. And I'm hoping that we might get to hear more of your story and Tipani's story as well as we go through this. I think this topic lends itself really well to those personal reflections and those personal kōrero. You know, what you're bringing with you. Tipani.
Tuatai, tēnei te mea te kia koe sali pai o mahi pai o karanga kia māua ki te kōrero ki tēnei kaupapa. Mihi hoki kia koe Lotta pai ki te tokanohi i tēnei wā. Lovely. Thank you, Sally, for that last minute karanga to us too. And yeah, I think any opportunity get to sort of share the love I'm in. And so, yeah, lovely to be here. And nō heo, folks, he uri au o te wako taki tumu nō Kahangunuki Wairua. So on my mum's side from Ngāti Kahangunu in the Highlands of Scotland under the Kōrawai of the Gordon Tartan Clan MacGregor. On my father's side, I come hail from Germany, a little place called Baden-Baden. And he grew up on the east coast of Tolaga Bay, and I grew up in Gisborne for the most part. And like us, Life and I have that connection too. We were sort of talking about this, folks. There's multiple connections in the addictions field that we work in. And one of them is that we have often our own experience. So at the age of 21, my mum said, you need to go. And if that means I get a phone call saying you're dead, that's how it has to be. But you have to leave home. You can't live here. And then a month later, her letting me go meant I got 12-stepped by somebody I didn't know. The woman whose bedsit I was living in came out one morning and said, I've got to talk to a friend of mine. She's 8 years clean from heroin just around the corner. And she could see that I was a train wreck. And this woman has said, anytime you want, 24/7, her door's open to you. And I had one of those hugely transformational experiences. I lost the desire to use, knew my life was going to change, got so excited about being in recovery, and I was tender age of 21. And so that started a journey of purpose and meaning, of which I've had a relapse after 8.5 years, and then got back into this program, and have had the pleasure of being able to, to do what I love to do what excites me, to follow that thread and follow my bliss. And this is recovery, and entering into the spirit has given me the opportunity to do all of those. I'll leave it there because I could just go on and on and on.
Yoda Tiffany, thank you for sharing that. Now, as we get into the korero today, I think probably we need to just think about what is this concept of end-of-year fatigue or end-of-year burnout? I'm sure everybody has experienced it to greater or lesser degrees. And I think that might actually even be key, that greater or lesser degree part of it. But any information you guys could share with us about what it actually is would be really useful.
Let it go.
I mean, as you say, it is a recognised thing that occurs. There's something about that calendar year that we live by, you know, January to December, that feels like a significant chunk of time. And we do bookend the year with the celebration of Christmas and the New Year's palaver and everything that goes with that. So we kind of build to this point of release. And I think the reality is, and it's always been this way, but especially now, we live in this world where we are go, go, go. We are always on. We are busy. We are attached to our phones. The world is coming at us. The world is busy. The world is complicated. There's a lot of painful things happening. And so in our lives, personally, work-wise, family, we've been putting in all this energy and effort. Then we've got the world coming at us and we're building to this point at the end of the year. And it does feel like all of a sudden there's all these pressures. There's all this expectation. Have I delivered? Have I done what I wanted to do? It all just culminates to where we can have quite tough times at the end of the year where we feel all manner of ways. We might be overwhelmingly sad. We might just be completely bone exhausted. We might be incredibly tense and stressed. We might be all of the above. So I think it is just that culmination of life. There's something about reaching that point of the end of the 12 months, and it's tough. Let's be honest. It's really tough for a lot of people.
Kia ora. And Lotto, I think I would probably have sat in that category until 2019. I think there's something about being self-employed and leaving where you have an autonomy you don't have when you sit working in an agency. And I think a lot of my sort of end of year fatigue and burnout came from not feeling like I had the autonomy to always do what I wanted to do. That I sat, and that I was often pressured to have outputs that weren't necessarily related to outcomes, and feeling that pressure to meet those sort of funding needs, and those take a toll on my ability to be compassionate towards someone else when I'm getting more tired, more caught up in the politics of what the services. I don't think I've met a service that doesn't have politics of some sort, and just all of those different relationships, of which the less control I had and the ability I had to determine my mana moto hakitanga, the greater the impact it have of shifting and draining me of energy. And in 2019, I left full-time employment and became self-employed. And sometimes that can have stress of a different kind of where's the work going to come from, the sense of aloneness that you can experience when you don't have the collegial conversations that really help sort of be a bit of a pressure valve when you're working in services. And at the same time, the mana motu hakitanga I felt, and I suppose if I take it back 3 years before 2019, I decided I wanted to work smart, not work hard. And I changed the mantra. I wanted 2 days on and 5 days off, not 5 days on and 2 days off.
Wow.
And although it's taken a bit of time, I've created that.
So are you saying that you don't feel like now you have that end of year?
No.
Stress and fatigue.
I haven't for the last 6 years. I feel like my life is a holiday.
Oh, beautiful. What about the other aspect of it, though? Because work, you're right, that's a big piece of it. But what about the family dynamics and all the humans around you? Because I do also think there's this myth of the happy family with easy dynamics, and that is just not the case for a lot of people. We just had a staff little morning tea here, and I was down one end of the table with four of my lovely colleagues, and we just got into like tricky dynamics, and every one of us had a story of some people in the family, and it can be really tough when you feel like everyone else's family is easygoing and yours isn't, and you're doing boundary work, or you know, that do you think that plays a part?
Yeah, I think there's a huge part, and I think it's to do with focus. If you have conversations like you're having, Lotta, and you're right, people can experience hardship and difficulties, but what we do is we tend to focus on that. Then we talk about it, then we make it bigger. And what I've learned is the more I would talk about that, often it didn't have the sense of relief that I thought it was. Often it would be a focus on heaviness and my mood would drop.
Yeah.
And because I often didn't feel like I had any power in that situation. I don't have a TV. I don't watch the news. I don't read anything to do with the news because I'm really protective about the vibration that I want. And it sounds really callous, but I'm not interested in what happens in Israel. I'm not so interested in even what happens here with the Māori politics and all that's happening in there, because the best thing I can do is to choose to keep my vibration high. And sometimes that means detaching from all of that drama that happens.
Yeah, okay, that's really good advice. Thank you. Even though you're not here to advise me, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who can also take some inspiration from that, because yeah, you're right. I mean, acknowledging it is good to sometimes share, to get validation, to feel like you're not alone if you are in a tricky situation, but then not dwelling or hanging out in that space too much. Okay, so where you put your attention.
Choose the wolf you want to feed, and the first thought might be automatic and that first conversation might be automatic, but choose the second one in maybe a mindful way. And I'd choose, you know, this young guy was on a podcast and he asked, like, I watched this guy called Bashar, and he's a bit of a medium. You know, this young kid asks him, what do I need to know? Everything I need to know in life. And he's like 11, this kid. And this guy goes, I can tell you that. Choose the thought that gives you the most excitement, even if it's just a little bit more excitement. Take that as far as you can to the best of your ability with integrity, and have no expectation on what the outcome will look like or insistence of how that journey might look to get there. And in doing so, that little three-part formula generally means when I've done that, I move from a state of stress to a state of relief, moving up that emotional scale, and life becomes flowing in the river, not trying to swim upstream.
I hear what you're saying, and it sounds great, and I love that your life feels like a holiday. And I'm going to try and channel Tiffany over the next few weeks. But, you know, there will be a lot of people right now who are running around with their heads cut off. They might have young children. They might have typical bosses. They're not working on their own. And so for those people, I always like to sort of think, just lower expectations on yourself. Take the pressure off. If you're buying a ready-made, you know, pavlova and some presents online that are going to arrive in time, you know, just don't make it more difficult than it needs to be, because again, there is this expectation of, oh, it's such a special day, Christmas, or a special meal, or a special this, that and the other. And it's just like, actually go easy on yourself. Focus on what it really is about, is connecting with the people you love, not being at work for the day, celebrating in the way that feels right for you, your culture, your religion, or whatever. It's not about ticking those boxes and making it look really good
from the outside and protect your stress. If you're really stressing out and your to-do list is long, cross some things off it, or how can you do it the least effort? And who can you get to help? I have to say this, a lot of women shoulder a lot of the effort around this time of year. And that's not to say men are bad, but, you know, oftentimes women do hold a lot of the kind of mental, emotional labor of the unseen work, you know, the buying the presents, the buying, making sure there's sellotape, et cetera, making sure there's enough milk and you've got the ice cream. And so just share it out, speak up. If you're feeling a little bit like I'm doing it all, just tell the people around you. They might not realize because it is unseen. And so just be vocal and try and get people to help.
Tēnā koe. Lord, there's a couple of things in there that you said that I think are super important. And you've given a really great description of, you know, don't do things out of obligation and take the path that feels like it's the least resistance. That's exactly what those three things were saying. Choose the thought gives you the most excitement. So choose the one that doesn't feel like obligation. Don't make a pavlova if it feels like it's easier to buy one. Wahine, and I think it's really important at these times, wahine hold community. And the Native American have this expression, when the hearts of our women are lying on the ground, our nation is broken, because they understood community is held through the wind. That means, Lotta, often women would shoulder the responsibility of holding the community together. Yeah, so enlist those men around you, get them doing stuff. That's all good, that they don't feel like they have to hold all that. Because I think you're right, it's disproportionate often, or maybe the roles and focuses are a little bit different, but often the women feel a sense of having to hold that community together.
Yeah.
And you sort of naturally do that as women a bit, I think.
Yeah, and bought pavlovas are good, just saying.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've given a great example of do what feels like you're flowing with the river rather than trying to be like that fish that's either flapping its tail fast enough just to remain in the current, or then trying to go as fast as it can to push against the current.
Yeah.
And I think what you're doing is you're sort of saying, choose things that aren't obligation, stop doing this and just go with the flow of the river and things work out.
Yeah. And if you're not in a position where you don't have people, you know, that you can ask or to share the jobs out, I always think just be really kind to yourself. And this is going to sound cheesy, but I have this thing where I will literally think, what does Lotta need right now? And I will, sometimes I'll say it out loud, because, and this isn't just at the end of year, Christmas, New Year's, whatever, this is any time, but just actually checking in with yourself, what do I actually need right now? What do I need in this moment? Can it just be quite a powerful little move? And then the next little move, what do I need? I need to sit down. Or I need to make a cup of tea. And here's the other thing that I often say. The small things are the big things. You don't have to book yourself a massage or, I don't know, order my food. But it doesn't have to be a grand move of self-care. A little gesture of I'm gonna buy myself that fancy tonic water and those dehydrated lemon slices, and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to make myself a drink and I'm going to watch The Real Housewives on my laptop for half an hour. It's not just the drink and the laptop, it's the message you're sending yourself. I deserve this little piece of time, and it's powerful. And those little things, they add up. It's a message.
Order.
You know, chill, take your time, look after yourself. It's just another
take yourself on a date. Even if it's 30 minutes and doing that and then very intentionally stop. I like that. Decide to do something small for yourself and take yourself on a date. I love that. That's such a really powerful. And as you said, little bit by little bit, those things add up and they become maintenance, so that you remain at the top of the cliff rather than have to pick yourself up at the bottom when you're just so exhausted because you haven't filled your cup.
Yeah, and let's talk about the bottom of the cliff. And I have to bring this in because this is my particular interest, but it is the elephant in New Zealand's room, which is alcohol. And, you know, this drug has been so normalized in our society. It's presented to us as the self-care action, as the normal thing that everyone uses. It's right there in the supermarket. Treat yourself. But actually, I just would implore people listening, and I'm not saying don't drink, you know, like me, because not everyone gets to where I was with alcohol, but
just really question, is this actually doing what I want it to do? Is this extra glass going to make me sleep well? Is it actually going to make me slur a bit or make me feel a bit more disconnected from my kids in the evening? Just have that eye on the alcohol in a way that's low pressure, because I get it, the drug works, it's stressful, but just do have an awareness of, is the alcohol really serving you and doing what it promises to do? Because we are heavily marketed to, especially this time of year, the advertising budgets of the liquor industry is just, this is where they spend all their money. And from my perspective now, often it's not the magical liquid that we've been led to believe, and it can cause more disconnection and more drama. I mean, have you ever been at drunken Christmas parties where, you know, you say or do that thing you regret? Not fun.
I what you're saying too there, Lotta, is you're sort of stopping yourself and intentionally asking yourself some questions. You know, I love Nada Govic. She said, the answer's not in the answer. It's the quality of question asked. And what you're doing is asking very specific questions. Do I need this? Will this make me happier? And being very intentional about what you do rather than do something out of habit and in a way that's maybe less mindful. It's like just sort of encouraging people to be more mindful around this time particularly and around consumption of alcohol and or other substances.
Indeed.
You mentioned in there that women often hold more of this emotional labor at this time of year. Are there other groups that might be more susceptible to end-of-year fatigue?
I don't know whether it's fatigue, but a different type of, you know, those marginalized, but it's those marginalized communities that it's the, maybe it's the sense of like older people in the community who may feel a bit forgotten about, and they're in an age and stage where they don't have peers who they can talk about the old days with, and maybe their family has a bit forgotten them. Or the LGBTQ sort of communities, the more marginalized communities, and Māori, I suppose you could say, sit in that as well. Whether it's sort of a work-related end-of-year fatigue, or whether it's just the ongoing efforts it takes to create communities of belonging with yourself when there can be societal pressures that say you don't belong or have marginalized you. And that takes effort because it's embedded into the society. It's one that gets overlooked. The effort it takes for Māori to constantly have to adjust to colonization, and for those in other marginalized communities, those same daily battles. And I think the answer is what you said, Lotta, and find small ways to treat yourself, to find community and create connection, and maybe have some time on just yourself. You know, Māori have the potama pattern, the steps, and this was about effort, and that while we're at work, we're doing this, and while we're learning, it requires attention and effort. You have to have this part to stop, rest, and reflect. There's a kaupapa to this part of the pattern that says at each stage in your journey, stop, pause, and engage in hine kaoro here, which was our female atua of reflections, and reflect on what's the learnings you've had from doing this. And I think there's something really powerful in that.
Yeah, love that. I tautoko everything you've just said, Tipuni. I think it's really important, especially for those of us who are European Pākehā. We have inherent privilege just moving in a world that's kind of suited to us and our culture, that Indigenous communities, people in the rainbow community, disability, you know, there are those extra layers that they're constantly dealing with day in, day out, week in, week out. Discrimination, racism. It's just hard. It, you know, it's just, it's doable, but it is an extra layer. That's, and
it's like swimming through mud, walking in mud.
Right. And so you get to the end of the year and yeah, it's a lot. And so I think it is important that we acknowledge that. And I'm trying in all the kōrero I'm doing now when I speak at conferences or events to name privilege. And
I'm still working out the words and the way to say it correctly, but just even acknowledging it, it's a truth. It doesn't mean I don't have hard things. I don't feel stressed. That's not invalidating my human experience, but acknowledging as Pākehā, I have an ease of a lot of things that other communities don't. And I have to say that out loud now. It's all I can do, put it in the room. But and if you are like me and you're in that community, be aware of it. Take every opportunity to support, uplift, validate, love people from different communities.
Tēnā koe, Lord. And I think that's what I appreciate about you, because you have that sort of awareness. You sort of take a sense of ownership. There's nothing about you that's sort of avoiding it or feels defensive about it. And I think for Māori, that's really important, because I know that people can feel a bit fragile about that if you're not Māori, and can feel like, and a bit anxious. So I really appreciate the way that you've put it in a very sort of matter-of-fact, easy way. And I think it opens the doors to conversations and shifting cultures, and coming back to our thing of sort of end of year. And although Māori and other communities might have things that are a bit like a sea they swim in, you do that also in your work. The culture at your work has that. Do you have a high trust culture, or do you have a low trust culture? Do you have a manager who's supporting you? Do you have a manager who's hovering over you? And those are enormous pressures that just build up and build up, and they become the sea that you suddenly are become unaware that you're swimming in, until you get to that point where, oh my God, I'm just having a meltdown and I'm going to leap off the cliff. So I think workplace culture is massive in this.
Sometimes people will be managing things that they don't even see or realise are there, because it's just a normal thing. So then we've got to come back to that balance of talking about it is important, so that you can get validation, but then not dwelling, because then it's you brought to bring back to what you were saying at the start of this, not dwelling there, because then it'll bring you down. So there's a balance there. And find the right people, I think. Yep. You know, I've got this friendship bracelet I made, and it's got the words that says Family OC, which stands for Family of Choice.
Sure.
You know, you build your whānau around you of the people. Yep. They might not be blood relatives. They might be your friends. They might be some colleagues, whoever, but bring them in close. They are important.
Yep. And I think, Lotta, there's something I've learned around that too, around having the right people. I don't have to do anything these days, other than just choose that thought that gives me the greater excitement, because people that come into my sphere tend to vibrate on that existence. I don't tend to attract people around me that don't have that sort of understanding. So it's required little effort. People just sort of come in. But I think that's wise, as you said, to choose. What is it? Friends and family of choice.
Yeah.
That, yes, we have the ability to choose. And if that means that whānau, blood whānau aren't working with you for you, that's okay too. Go find those who you feel like you belong to, and there's a reciprocal love and aroha for.
Yeah. Hey, I don't want to take over the interviewing, Sally, but I would love to hear Tepini talk about Te Whare Tapawhā, because you and I work, you know, we know this model very well. We know it inside out, but there may be people listening who, it seems remarkable in this day and age, but there are still, I find, people who aren't familiar with this wonderful model of well-being, and I just think it's so good. It's worth, like, spelling out what is it, because it can really help people if they're thinking about looking after their well-being to think of each of those po. Do you mind? Because I know that you're very strong in talking about Te Whare Tapawhā.
I love the... It's going to be a slight different version, slightly different. So when I was at Te Ate a Marino, I'm working now, I worked around a lot of tohunga, and they gave a different version of tapawhā that included Māori. And so if you can imagine your Māori's your that sort of the energy, it's an energy, a fine vibration that exists within you that holds your wairua to your tinana, gives you a sense of identity. Mā means pure, O means you, Mo means to hold, Ri is a fine vibration, and Uri means to send. And it's this gift of the creator of an energy that holds those two elements together, our wairua, wā time, e of rua tu, or wai rua. In order for that wairua to exist, it needs two waters to come together, the waters of the masculine and waters of the feminine. When those come together, you have the Wairua here. So you have, and yet the Wairua needs help, this sort of eternal part of you, in order to live in this world, needs some help, needs some way to gather information and hold that and make sense of it. And Hinengaro, when you break that word up, he means to capture. Your eyes don't see, your ears don't hear. They capture light information. They capture sound information when you're thinking about what you want to do as a strategy for bringing yourself to a state of peace. What are you exposing yourself to? What sort of information are you capturing that's going to change how you feel? And aro means to focus. Part of the mahi of the Hinengaro was to focus. And he also can mean to align, so that you are bringing yourself into alignment, doing exactly what you said there, Lotta. If the act of alignment is going to buy a ready-made pavlova or taking yourself on a date because it feels good, then that feeling is your signal that you're in alignment. Your emotion is your, from a Māori perspective, that's when you know you're in alignment. You're feeling free and you're feeling easy. You're in alignment and things tend to flow very quickly. Then, of course, you need the opportunity to express all of that. And so all of this is housed within a tinana. And so looking at these different levels, I guess, for some people, a sense of faith when you're looking at the Wairua, their belief in a power greater than themselves gives them a great sense of relief, and to be able to hand that over to a power, whatever issues they might have, is really important. For some, it's karakia, and we would use these words that have a particular vibration to them to create a specific type of energy. So if I want peace, I'm going to use a karakia with rongomatani in it, because that's the utter of peace, for example. And the last of that is whānau. Mm-hmm. Now, whānau, actually, rather than break the word down, it belongs to a bigger word, which is whakawhanaungatanga. O is the very, is you, right in the middle of that. No means to belong, no. So I belong, whānau. Back in the day was your blood relations. Now it includes what you said, Lotta. It's extended to mean those you choose to have in your life that you feel like you belong to, and there's that reciprocal feeling of love and aroha and energy between you. Whanaunga is your extended kazis. Whaka means to create connections of belonging, and tanga is the sense of kinship that you have when you feel you belong. Now, although we emphasize a collective culture in Te Ao Māori, without the O, nothing else exists. If you cut that center part of the flax plant out, nothing else is going to exist. So you've got to look after you. You are important. Make you important. It's not all about the family all the time. In fact, my mum would say that, shared this expression, if the universe is like a jigsaw and each of us has our own unique modi and unique piece, and no matter how small that piece might be in the grand scheme of the collectivity of the universe and each other, without your piece, the universe isn't complete. You make a difference. She was fucking done. School with them last week. She was cool. She had some amazing insights. And when I think about that, it makes me think, yes, I have a purpose. I matter. I belong. But look after me. It's not just about looking after everyone else.
Yeah. What does Tepini need? What does
Tepini need? Which is exactly what you said at the beginning. Mm. What do you need? Not what everyone else needs. What do you need? You know, you can only be as good as you are in looking after yourself.
Beautiful.
So I don't know if any of that makes any sense, because I've gone on a bit of a wānanga journey there, folks, but thank you for being very kind. I'm going to do that.
I'm leaving space for Sally in case she wants to guide us, because we are happily chatting, Tiffany.
No, I'm happy to let you guys chat. I was just going to mention, though, just how much I love the etymology of Māori kupu. That is always so fascinating whenever I get the kind of gift of listening to someone explain how the words are formed. It's just like layer upon layer upon layer of meaning. It's excellent.
I guess when you're looking at what feeds you, and one of the questions you had in the brief is, what is it that you're looking for next year? You know, and one of the, for me, is having been shown that when I was at Te Ātea Marino, the beauty. I didn't know that we had sounds and each sound had a genealogy. So going back to Te Reo next year, and you know, this is where you've got to love the universe. I had put a karanga out. I really love that knowledge, just in the same way you've described, Sally. So we had a group interview last week or the week before, and the woman who's going to take us, she has all of that knowledge. She was breaking those kubidā. I felt like I was in heaven. And so I'm so looking forward to I know it's going to be tough, but I'm so looking forward that my kete is going to be filled. And I think having something to look forward to. And what is it that people are looking forward to in your new year without feeling like you're going to contract yourself to some sort of New Year's resolution, which is then going to bash yourself.
Does that exist in Te Ao Māori, the kind of New Year's resolution concept? So what's the New Year kind of rituals, if that's the right word, or, you know, thinking around the turning of that calendar year? It's obviously not Matariki, that December to January switch. But
we didn't have anything for this time of the year because it really was around Matariki. So one of those was to... And like, unfortunately, my memory's not good, but one of those whetū is about what is it that you're intentionally going to create or focus on for your next year, as well as honouring your ancestors, honouring the providence of what you have. One of them was about where you're going. And so we were very intentional about forming some form of intention. And that might look really different for different people. I found that really helpful on a daily basis. You were talking earlier, Lotta, about Susie Morrison. So she, for 30 years, this cool woman has been writing it. She calls it writing it right. Came out of a tradition of
the artist's way.
The artist's way. But that writing it right.
Morning pages.
Those morning pages.
Mm.
Were an opportunity as I only started doing this 2 months ago, to set an intention. And my intention might be just to notice beauty, just to notice the good things or to have a smile at someone. And those things make a difference. So on one hand, you can have the big Matariki intention of what would I like for the next sort of lunar year. And another was what you do in the day. And I know you, what do you do, Lotta, for you, that you have that anchors you and gives you that sense of purpose and excitement that when you get up the next morning, you feel excited?
That's a big question. I think it's definitely my whānau, my immediate whānau that I live with, my husband and my sons. But in terms of intentions for next year, I do have a set intention, which is to take my foot off the gas a little bit. I'm 54 now, coming up 55 next year. Our kids are starting to leave home. I've had my foot flat for many years on the gas, trying to, you know, just stimulate my brain and do interesting things, but also maybe prove myself to who I don't know. And with the help of some therapy this year for some stuff that was pretty deep, I've started seeing that while it's given me a lot of satisfaction and kudos, it has also depleted me somewhat. And so it's going to be quite a key shift for me and probably quite hard to pull back a little bit.
Yeah. Because you're saying, I'm changing my relationship to how I leave a legacy in this world.
Correct.
One is through your kids, another is through meaning and purpose in the work that you do and what you do in your ripple that creates ripples for people like me. You know, the invitation from you to become part of Blueprint was part of that. So, you know, you've made a difference to my life and being who you are. And I like the idea of taking, you well deserve a break and in doing so, I reckon if that gives a sense of relief, the rest will just take care of itself.
Yeah, and then hopefully I'll end up where my life feels like a holiday.
Yes.
Because I want that.
I'd be keen to pick up this idea of New Year's resolutions a wee bit more. And the idea of the pressure that may come with them. I appreciate that there may be a sense of accomplishment that comes from the idea of making a resolution or an intention. But I can imagine the flip side of it is that it's putting pressure on ourselves. And we've talked a lot about self-care and needing to prioritize yourself and your needs. Any reflections you've got on the idea of making a resolution or not would be really interesting.
I think it brings pressure, but I also think it always brings disappointment because the human brain, we like to go, I'm going to do this. And you feel genuinely in the moment, the enthusiasm and the determination, but life, you know, often makes it harder than you realize to do those grand steps. Like I'm going to lose 10 kg or I'm going to completely change my, or I'm going to go to the gym every, you know, and we have this, I'm going to do a radical overhaul of my daily, day in, day out life. And if I've learned one thing over my 54 years, it's very hard to do that. And if you don't get me started on diet culture, because it's my other outrage after alcohol culture, but diets do not work. And the most likely outcome of starting a diet is that it will fail. So just know that is well-researched scientifically.
Yeah, Chris.
So again, I think, you know, it's that thing about the little things and the gentle things. And if you want to do it, it can be quite fun to have a little moment on New Year's Eve to yourself where you sit down and you maybe go, you know, what are some intentions I might have? But just make them achievable and small and just be gentle and kind to yourself. And if it doesn't work, that's okay too. You know, we're all just trying our best, bumbling through. So yeah, I'm not a fan of the grand dramatic life changes, but you might end up in that place. But just the little thing that you could do towards it is probably make you feel better about yourself.
Yeah, and a lot of that sounds like an expression you and I know, well, one day at a time. You don't have to wait till the end of the year to reinvent your next day. You can do it each day. And it tends to be a lot more manageable than I'm going to change everything over this next year. Small steps, one day at a time, often has big results.
I think one thing that's maybe helping this idea is of kind of thinking about one day at a time is the, this is a real aside from what we thought we'd talk about, but the idea that we've now got Matariki as a national holiday as well. And just the idea that, in fact, we're celebrating two New Years now. And that in itself is just a very little, but also a huge step in terms of how people think about rebirth and beginnings and all those sorts of things. And Matariki is fantastic anyway, but it's, I think it's got lots of benefit in terms of thinking about some of these broader questions around restarts.
Tēnā koe, and I think something, Sally, that I won't say too much about it, but New Zealand, maybe, I don't know how many other countries do, we officially have not just the Gregorian calendar, but the lunar calendar is now part of New Zealand. So our relationship to time hopefully will start to change. Māori have a view of time, mā te wā, mā in the purity and clarity, wā, time and place, literally sort of means in the right time and the time that it takes, time expanded and contracted depending upon the gravity of the kaupapa that you are in. So some things need more time, some things need less time, but give them the time. It's a bit like the rushing like hell paradox. If you believe like you've got 15 minutes, it might take all day. If you believe like you've got all day, it might take 15 minutes.
Yeah, I love that Matariki's become more, I mean, obviously Māori have known about it forever, but it has become more prominent, you know, in the minds of all New Zealanders. And let's be honest, New Year's Eve is often just seen as a big party, a big piss up, you know, a night to have a bash. And Matariki's not about that. It's a much more gentle, holistic, it's winter, it feels lovely, it comes with all that meaning that we're, you know, absorbing, and it's just great. So yeah, maybe just take the pressure off New Year's a bit and look after yourselves if you are going to some big crazy bash.
That's hard, you know. Matariki lends itself to winter, which is time to hunker down. You don't want to go anywhere anyway. You just want to sit in front of. So in summer, you know, it is the time to sort of be out there and be alive. And this is the time of the sun that, you know, kia ora doesn't actually mean be well. Ora means, ra is short for tamanui te ra. So of the sun. Kia ora literally means may that life-giving energy of the sun to you, of the day. Kia ora means, of the day or of the sun. So I think what you're saying is lot of, well, you can take the summer lends itself sort of to celebration too, and to that energy, and people want to feel like they can let their hair down a little bit and release some of that pressure too.
Yeah.
So
and the best thing about that is often the hugs that you have at midnight with the people that you're in the same room with.
Oh.
For old lang syne, my dear. Happy New Year, you know how it goes.
But it is, there's always a good, there's a good vibe.
It's always about connection.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Those
with your family of choice. Let's bring it back. Circle back to the point.
So Tipuna, you mentioned summer and ora. How about some tips for well-being over summer?
I think we've sort of really given them a lot. Take yourself on a date. I do. I take myself to the movies sometimes, or if there's something, a concert or something that I like, I'll go on my own and I just sort of take myself on a date deliberately. Or the other thing, I know it sounds a bit, it's the writing in the morning. I adopted that tip of writing it right, getting what's in my head out so that I moved from a state of feeling, oh, to a state of thinking, oh my gosh. And that writing did that. 3 pages would shift that. And it's been so helpful. So a little bit of meditation and that in the morning, I'd say has been the profoundest thing that I could, if there was anything I'd say to try, would be give that a shot, see where that ends up. It's been really profound for me. And always remember, iti te kupu nui te kōrero, that although small a word you may be, that your kōrero, your kaupapa matters, and you'll have influences that you may never know about that will be profound for other people. You make a difference. And remember that.
Oh. I could listen to you all day. I'll just repeat my things. Be mindful of alcohol, please. It is normalised and we're saturated in it through summer, and it does cause a lot of harm. So just be mindful of that. Just have an eye on it. Connect with the people that love you and lift you up, whoever they may be. And the small things are the big things. So have that little moment of what do I need? What do I need right now? And if it's just to sit down with a cup of tea, do that.
Bang on. Bang on. Oh, I think we've solved the world's problems for Christmas and New Year.
I really like, and this comes back to your point, Tipuna, about the etymology of words and whānau and o being kind of embedded within that. Mm. I think that's a really fantastic way of visualising what we've been talking about. You know, that the word needs that o at the end, and yeah, your family needs you in there as well.
Aye. And if you don't have the family around you, you don't sort of make any sense because you don't belong anywhere. So you sort of need having those people that you choose makes a difference. I think we've lowered the bar for people a lot of that. They can take the bar down. I don't have to set the bar so high and meeting obligations when just doing what's easiest and what feels like it's in the flow of the river will be maybe the best choice they can make.
I love that. Lower the bar. Lower the bar, people.
Yeah.
We also sort of touched on it earlier as well, was around social media and exposure to technology and the pace of the world and the particularly tragic nature of the world as it is at the moment. Almost like a detox.
Yeah, I would just say be mindful of where your algorithm's taking you. It's designed very well to capture you and hold you. And look, I spend time on Reels on Instagram. I've got rid of TikTok, but I'm guilty of that. But I try and be really mindful of it because, you know, sure enough, yesterday I was just getting all these videos from Sydney and it was too much. I was in tears. It doesn't mean you don't care if you turn away. It doesn't. You can care a lot, but you have to, it is. There's a lot of pain and sadness out there. So just, try and use that little bone that we're all attached to wisely. Yeah. And If you want to be on it, that's fine, because I understand it does work to decompress, but maybe find games that are more gentle or fun than actually just social media and the algorithms, because even if you've trained your algorithm to give you the content you want, things will sneak in before you know it, and you just watch one video all the way through and suddenly the algorithm thinks you want more of that, and then all of a sudden half an hour later you've had, you know, 20 minutes of the stuff that actually isn't good for your mental health. So, yeah, it's just that thing about being mindful.
That's a really good point, Laura. And I was talking to my son today, because we often get lost in those little reels, but there's something that we both intentionally choose. One is watching animals' interactions with people, like cats, and there's some real warm fuzzies. And I watch comedy. I watch comedy and it gives me a great boost. And so you're right, sort of being mindful about what you're exposing yourself to, which is why I don't watch the news, why I don't have a TV, and I don't read newspapers, I don't watch the news and any of that stuff for that very reason, Lotta. And I probably feel, or what you're sort of saying too, is when you don't do that stuff, it keeps you in a state of not feeling so heavy, not feeling so powerful, powerlessness or sad. You feel a bit more relief, a bit lighter in the world, and that makes a huge difference. I think that vibration is what then feeds other people around you when you sit in a place of lightness of being rather than the heaviness of the pain, and in choosing what you expose yourself to. It's part of that.
And one theme we haven't really touched on yet is the financial pressures that come at this time of year, compounded by the cost of living crisis that we're all well aware is occurring at the moment as well. So I guess just as we wrap up, any final thoughts, but also thinking about the financial issues would be quite good.
I mean, again, lower the bar. The gift giving is the connection. So if it's a, you know, $7.50 packet of fancy fudge for your niece or nephew or auntie or workmate, that's enough. Because it's the gesture. I mean, no one remembers. Do you remember what you got for Christmas last year? It's irrelevant. Yeah. So don't go crazy on the gift, the cost of gifts. And it is hard financially. There's no doubt about it. Everything is so expensive at the moment. Mm. So, you know, just the good bare minimum if you can. And being mindful around the spending, and it's all the same things we've repeated, isn't it, about just lowering expectation and just focusing on what actually matters. The connections matter. The fact that you're not a stressed out wreck matters.
And I think I love that, Lotta. And like, I've got, just sitting in front of you, can't see it, I've got a whole lot of cards that people have written to me over the years and written really beautiful things in it. And I thought, you just sort of sparked an idea of, because I was going, that felt that pressure to buy stuff. And I thought, what I'm going to do, I'm going to write cards for people and tell them what they mean to me. So I'll always go back and look at those words. So you've just triggered off my, thank you for solving the solution that you didn't even know I had.
That's a great idea. Yeah, writing a meaningful message to someone in a card, and that can be the gift.
Yeah, my son found a letter my dad had written to him 8 years ago, and he was so buzzed reading that again. And I thought, it wasn't any gift, it was the words on that paper. Mm. He was like, yes, I will do that. It's only cards, folks. There's no... That's good. And words of love and appreciation. You matter to me because...
Mm.
Yeah. As Tar Jury would say, it's a much more powerful question to say what matters to you than what's the matter with you.
Mm.
Thanks, Mr. Jury. That was a cool little gem.
Also harder to articulate in many ways as well. It requires quite a lot more self-reflection.
Uh-huh. E te tukupu, no e te kōrua. Fewer words, but huge is the meaning. Yeah.
Any final words of wisdom as we wrap up?
I know, I feel like I've sort of said everything that I didn't know I was going to say, but it feels like that just all came out the right way. and really rapt to be here. Thank you, Lotta, for stimulating having a conversation. Thank you, Sally, for bringing us together. There's no accident this happened, and it'll make a difference for people in whatever way. They will take something from that, and really rapt to be a part of that. And for me, be able to know that the words that I use and writing those down so people can see them again has always meant a lot to me. And if I can do that for someone else, then I think that will raise the vibration more than giving them a Nutri bullet, actually.
And yeah, and I'll just say go easy on yourselves. You know, there's a lot going on at the moment for everyone. There's a lot going on in the world, and there'll be a lot of people like us giving you advice and tips, and take what you can, but don't beat yourself up. Do your best. Whatever you do is good enough with good intention and good heart. Just go easy on yourselves and have a good one.
Be kind to self, eh, Lotta? Be kind to self.
Always.
Nice.
And now, Cordura, thank you both so much. I've come away with some few nuggets of wisdom, and the power of words, I think, really came through very strongly in this kōrero today, which is lovely. Being a radio show, we're all about the power of words. So thank you very much. And I'm sure that everybody listening will have some tips, but also just some, hopefully some kind of real motivation to go away and think about what it is that they need and they want. What little steps can they take that might guide them there?
Tēnā koe.